when people are exhibiting toxic positivity, the real problem with it is that it breaks the bonds. Because you're not really with the person. You're not really trying to be understanding and empathic. So, and instead, the person just feels totally invalidated. And very often, it occurs in relationships where people are kind of using other people just for ends. So it's just easier to tell people to be positive because you're not really concerned about their overall flourishing. You're just concerned about them doing their job.
Hey, this is Sharif here with another episode of The Golden Hour, joined by Dr. Kevin Majors. Kevin, great to be here with you again.
Hey, Sharif, it's great to be back.
Well, Kevin, so I've been thinking about our inventory a little bit lately, and two questions in particular jumped out at me, or I should say one question about two items, because the items of the inventory are statements. One is, I almost never complain. And then the second is, I finish my tasks with the same enthusiasm with which I started them. And so the question is about our relationship with negative emotions, which both of these questions are kind of getting at in some way, and the accusation that maybe we're promoting a mindset of toxic positivity. So I want to discuss this with you.
Yeah, this is something that's been discussed more and more lately. Because there's a book that came out about this during the pandemic, by a therapist, Whitney Goodman, called Toxic Positivity. And so sometimes then, you know, and there's this question we got, like, how do we distinguish what we're talking about here from that, from toxic positivity? People also talk about toxic productivity, which is like another interesting topic. And I like the concept of toxic positivity because it gives a name to something that has always seemed a problem to me, but I didn't know how to put it, which is, what do you do when you're suffering and someone says something kind of too easy, like everything happens for a reason? Well, even if you believe everything happens for a reason, there's something kind of almost offensive about being told that if you're really suffering in the moment. Like if someone just lost a family member, you wouldn't tell them, well, everything happens for a reason. Which, okay, like, well, I'm not sure, like, so what do you do with that kind of seemingly positive advice where people are telling others, like just offer it up, or just look on the bright side, or just, you know, different traditions have different ways of saying it that can be really invalidating. And so I think that what toxic positivity is talking about is the invalidating of negative emotions through some kind of, like, I don't know, some kind of seeming encouragement. So, and it's not really, it's pseudo-encouraging. I don't think it's actually encouraging anyone to be told, you know, well, look on the bright side, you know, or this, you know. But it does have to be distinguished from what we talk about. Because if we're saying, like, the goal is to, you know, almost never complain, then are we saying that anytime a person is complaining, that that's like a failure? So, and what's our relationship with complaining? And so I think that those are very important questions.
Yeah. So I pulled up a definition of toxic positivity in preparation for our discussion, which says the pressure to only display positive emotions, suppressing any negative emotions, feelings, reactions, or experiences. So I think it's interesting. I don't know if you would include this in your definition, but like pressuring people to only display positive emotions. Do you see that as inherent to it? That pressure?
Well, it seems to me that the essential element is invalidation. So that it's invalidating a negative emotion or experience. And so that to me, you know, it comes with the pressure to just be positive. So there is this element of forcing people to be or act or display positivity. So I think that's, now, there are cases, though, Where, so for instance, I'm a psychiatrist. If I am personally suffering from something, you know, is it good that I display that to every one of my patients? So, well, it's not really fitting. It's like, you know, the, so even, you know, when I had, you know, I'd be sad about something like the death of a family member. Like, now, there was no need for me to burden my patients with some job of consoling me by displaying that I was sad about this. So, but I don't think that's not any kind of toxic positivity. So it's just that it was being professional. I think that many times being professional does mean that you keep up your professional persona so that you can serve the people that you're with in the best way possible. And so I do think that it doesn't mean that you share all suffering with everyone. But you do have to have people you share it with. And you do have to be able to experience it. So what I think is the essence of toxic positivity is invalidating negative emotional experiences. And in a way, blaming people for negative emotions and turning negative emotions themselves into some kind of shortcoming or failure. And that would be the real danger then, you know, that if people think that never complaining means never feeling a negative emotion. So two things I would say is, one is that the negative emotion that we experience, so say you're like, people come to me for help with their emotions all the time. And let's say that you're dealing with someone who has a problem with anger. Very commonly, when people experience problems with anger, they feel guilty immediately whenever they get angry. And one of the things I have to help them to do is to change their stance towards the anger so that they can be understanding with it and patient with it, and in a sense, kind with it, like feel it, let themselves feel the anger. And not to see anger as a failure, but no, that's just the setting for some really important growth. And people do need to learn how to feel the anger and still let the provocation bring out their best response. Because almost never is it good to just vent your anger as soon as you feel it. So I think that that would be the wrong understanding of like how to handle the negative emotion. So in fact, acting on a negative emotion to make it go away is a way of being against it. It's a way of being unwilling to experience it. So it's actually more in line with the toxic positivity, as if I must feel positive. And so like, if I'm feeling angry, I'm just going to get rid of it. If I have a craving, I'm just going to give into it. Or if I have anxiety, I'm just going to give into it and feel better. It's like insisting that you have to feel good all the time, or that you couldn't act your best when feeling bad or feeling something that's a painful emotion. But I think that the real growth happens. If people struggle with anger, the moment they're provoked and they feel their anger is the setting for a really decisive victory. They can simultaneously let themselves feel it and respond in a caring or thoughtful way. And that's how you shape yourself.
Okay, so that's a really important point, that when we experience negative emotions, that's not a defeat, but is actually the setting for our growth. Okay, so what was the second thing then?
The second thing is that, what is complaining? So why would we be against complaining itself? I would say that complaining is venting frustration. And the only reason to be against it is not because that's some kind of moral failure, but because frustration, when it's vented, only increases. So you momentarily can feel better, but you haven't actually really engaged the challenge. So you could complain about your boss again and again and again. The real challenge is your relationship with the boss. But you don't improve it by venting your frustration about it. So when people complain to us, I think what we want to be doing is not telling them to stop complaining, but to instead be as understanding as we can. Because people in those moments do need the bond that they're, you know, the person they're talking with, you know, and to feel the strength of that bond. What we want when we're hearing complaining is, we want to let the strength of the bond be felt. so that the care we have for the person is felt. That is, in the end, going to always be able to help them bring out their best. So it's not telling them to stop complaining about this or count your blessings or some kind of dismissive thing where you're telling people that it's like not okay to feel bad about this. Instead, it's like, really, it's like, oh, tell me more about that. And you try to be understanding so that they feel the strength of the bond. So complaining is venting your frustration, either internally to yourself or to another person. And what people need in those moments is not just to be understood, but eventually to be helped to really engage the challenge itself. So that means, like, what frustrates us, I would say, in general, sometimes it's purely other people and they do something and it's understandably painful and provoking. But many times, especially if it's something repeated, it's that our strategy for dealing with that provocation or that person hasn't really been evolving. And what we really need is some kind of flexible way of dealing with this challenge, to look at it in some new way, to try to be creative. That is how you start to, like, let the triggers for complaining bring out your best. So complaining isn't a failure. Noticing the urge to complain isn't a failure. But it's a setting for a real moment of growth, which is then to actually think about the challenge you're complaining about and then to get a clear idea in your mind of how could this bring out my best right now? And that actually is liberating for people. So encouraging others means helping them to take a new view of the challenges they're facing. Sometimes it's enough that they just feel understood and that they're concerns are valid, then that's all they needed. And they're kind of, sometimes they're more perplexed. And so if you're dealing with someone completely perplexed about how a challenge can bring out their best, you might help them then to brainstorm or to think of things, but only once they've already felt understood. Otherwise, you run the risk of invalidating them.
Hmm. So it seems like underlying this is the distinction between the negative emotions people are experiencing and the behaviors of how they respond to that. And then, I don't know, is there a similar dynamic then with positive emotions that, so we have this inventory item, you know, I finished my task with the same enthusiasm with which I started them, rate yourself 1 through 10. So now I guess someone would have the sense, I feel like I'm being forced to be enthusiastic about a task that I don't like.
Exactly.
So that's like the mirror image of this, yep. Right?
Exactly. And this is the thing about toxic positivity, where it's trying to force negative emotions to go away or force positive emotions to come. So all of that, I think, goes completely against this idea of being understanding and patient with your own emotions. Letting them be there, letting yourself feel them, so that it's not wrong to feel anything. But always, when we're provoked emotionally, we do need to be able to step back and consider, what is the best way for me to respond here right now? Because we're only provoked when there's a real challenge. And it's a good question, how can this challenge actually bring out a better response in me? And it's kind of liberating. Because it can happen that we get stuck in a negative view of all of these types of challenges or this particular kind of challenge, and then we keep responding in the same way, and it keeps happening again and again. We're stuck in a vicious cycle. So reframing is actually how you break vicious cycles. You accept that there's going to be this emotion, you let yourself feel it, and then you do the courageous thing of you take a step into the challenge and try to have it bring out your best. And then gradually you get more confident doing that. And it gets easier and it gets more rewarding and you develop this virtuous cycle. So enthusiasm is just a sign of virtuous cycles taking place. You can say enthusiasm is like a non-specific sign that there are virtuous cycles taking place in a task or in relationships. So when relationships are going well, you get more and more enthusiastic about them. And if you can tell that the enthusiasm is waning, then you can ask yourself, not to blame yourself or to blame the other person, that'd be worse, you know, but to be just thinking, okay, how can I really be putting my best into this? Like, how can I actually genuinely be more sincerely seeking the good of the other, like sincerely seeking to build the bond with the other? How can I be more forgetting of myself? How can I be more generous with the other person? So we always link enthusiasm to those qualities that let us transcend ourselves. So it has nothing to do then with just like, ooh, you lost your enthusiasm, that's bad. The goal is to be helping people to think, what, like, where in my work or in my relationships can I actually be building these virtuous cycles? Where can I be challenging myself? You know, what's the right kind of thing to strive for? You never want the emotion to be the thing you're striving to control. So I think that always ends up working again. Like, you try to control your anxiety by getting rid of it, you're going to end up having more of it. So that's the essence of vicious cycles. Trying to control emotions will always lead to vicious cycles. You might feel better in the moment, but it's going to come back because you haven't really addressed the challenge and grown through it.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, not to be a contrarian, but it seems like the maybe toxic positivity and a little bit of what you've been arguing against is, you know, the stifling of negative emotions. I think there's an approach to like personal growth or self-help or self-improvement that has this kind of military mindset, almost like self-discipline. And so just tough it out, what, you know. So people, it seems like people benefit from that approach. That, hey, when something bad happens to you, you just have to be tough. And then it seems like people do grow when they take that approach. And I think there are a number of popular influencers out there who advocate this kind of approach, and they have a big following of people who say, wow, this person really changed my life and so forth. So so what's going on there?
Well, it seems that somehow they're helping people to engage challenge in a real way. So for instance, taking total responsibility for your own life and never letting yourself blame others. So this idea of extreme ownership. You know, it extreme ownership could be used in an invalidating way. You know, if someone was feeling sad about something and you're gonna tell them like, hey, you just have to take responsibility for your sadness. I'm not sure that in the moment would be the helpful thing. So, but if it's a matter of someone who is blaming others for their failure to thrive in life, and you tell them, hey, you just need to take responsibility for your own thriving. Don't wait for other people to help you thrive. And they're like, yeah, that's right. I think the key is that for some people, it's the right way to get them to engage challenges and to actively challenge themselves. I think what we deal with in Optimal Work is just what's the at the core of helping people to grow in the face of challenge. And part of it is that they need to actively be the ones challenging themselves, not to make negative emotions go away or negative experiences go away, but in fact, because it's how they do good to themselves and others, which I think is the, in the end, we want to live lives that actually do good to ourselves and to those around us and to those that we affect through our work. And that desire to like do this kind of good is the real source of enthusiasm. So it's all the same. Like the more you're into your work being genuine service, doing it as well as you can, the more likely virtuous cycles are going to continually be coming up in it, where things get easier and ways of being that are good get easier. So to be cheerful and to be engaging and attentive and thoughtful and caring and all these beautiful qualities get easier and easier the more you practice them. So I think sometimes the school of toughness type approach is what people need to hear, especially if they've gotten into a real trap of blaming others for their failings or their own. Now I should say though that the this kind of relates to this idea that I like to say a lot, which is that people don't fail, strategies fail. And in that sense, Complaining is a failed strategy. Venting frustration is a strategy that doesn't really work to make you less frustrated in the long run. Although, if you can, if you're building bonds in the short run, it might feel a little bit better. But you haven't really changed your approach to the challenge, so it brings out a new strategy. So one thing that can be really helpful to people is just to think of the challenges they're facing, the things that they're like likely to complain about, and just think, like, what would be a new strategy for engaging this? So thinking in terms of strategies actually is a very helpful way, because it brings out creativity and flexibility and the idea of like doing something new with it. So maybe that's also what the military people, the military people are really into strategizing. And there might be implicit in that the sense of like positively engaging challenges with new strategies.
Wonderful. So, okay, Kevin, one last question. It's only 50% related to what we've been talking about. So this is was a question that I got recently, and I was kind of thinking when I got it, I wonder what Kevin would say to that. So this person was talking about a situation where it's about reframing, where they were starting college and they were a little bit nervous, worrying. And then someone came up to them and said, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen? You could have no friends and flunk out. That's not so bad. And so that is not really a reframe, I think, as OptumWorks would see it. But it's just not in the moment really helped that person to just to have a lighter attitude towards the challenge of starting college at a new place. And so now looking, actually, this person said, looking back almost 20 years later or something, said, wow, that was stood out as the best, you know, advice or counseling I've ever received, that it just helped me really embrace the challenge of college somehow in an indirect way. So what would you say?
Could you imagine being told what's the worst thing that could happen? Can you imagine being told that in two different ways? One where someone who is busy and didn't have time to talk to you, you know, and you share this worry, and then they say, like, what's the worst that could happen? And they kind of, it could be dismissive, right? Or it could be someone who knows you and thinks well of you. And when they ask you the question, what's implicit in it is, like, what do you think are going to be the most realistic challenges you face when you're doing this? And essentially, they're being, like, told, like, there are challenges, maybe, but the hard things are very remote and unlikely. So maybe the person felt accompanied in some way in the challenge. I think that it has to like go into the relationship that they have and how it was said, because it could be dismissive, or it could actually be just the kind of encouragement the person needs to face up to their fears. Like, and if someone has confidence in you and your ability to thrive, and that's what this is being like conveyed, is like that, like, I have total confidence that no matter what comes up, you're going to be able to do it. So tell me then, like, what would be the worst thing? And they're like, well, okay, now that I think about it, nothing really bad would be that likely. What's likely isn't really that bad. You know, I'm not sure if that answers your question exactly, but I think it depends so much on the relationship. I mean, what really gets, when people are exhibiting toxic positivity, the real problem with it is that it breaks the bonds. Because you're not really with the person. You're not really trying to be understanding and empathic. So, and instead, the person just feels totally invalidated. And very often, it occurs in relationships where people are kind of using other people just for ends. So it's just easier to tell people to be positive, because you're not really concerned about their overall flourishing. You're just concerned about them doing their job, you know, or whether it's at home or at work. You're just concerned about them getting done what you hope they get done. And you don't want the negative emotions to get in the way of that. Instead, the moments of, like when people around us are suffering, you know, what they need is the bond. And with the bond, we can be also helping to be feeling what they're feeling, to actually be feeling their emotions through the bond. That's a beautiful thing. It's like a form of mindfulness. to welcome what others are feeling, to be there with them. But that doesn't mean then thinking that that's the end of the story. It's that, no, this is actually an important moment for them to grow. What they probably most need is just to feel the bond is strong. And then you kind of give them the confidence that they, and this can bring out their best in some way.
Well, Kevin, I think that's a very powerful point that I think as people get more familiar with our approach at Optimal Work of reframing that, yeah, there can be a tendency to let helping others reframe actually just becomes toxic positivity. So if you notice that that's what you're doing, oh, just tough it out, just offer it up, that's a good sign that you're not putting the bond first, that you're actually using the other person. So that's a great thing, I think, to keep in mind.
Yeah. And so the negative emotions, we don't wish them on people, but when they occur with people we love, they do draw us closer together. And I think, you know, families that have been through losses have experienced that reality too, you know, that you're brought closer. And so there is something here that empathy, you know, allows us, you know, to have stronger bonds. So, and that's one thing toxic positivity can never have. It can never have empathy. This essence is the invalidation of negative emotion. So as long as we're like truly empathic with others, wanting to really experience what they're experiencing, then we, in a sense, earn the right to eventually help them to see how this can actually bring out a new response in them. But that too can't be rushed. So when they're ready for it, if they're asking us for it, then we can kind of help them to think about that. Mm-hmm.
And for those listening, validating and empathizing, those are two of the key skills of being coaching others, which are covered in the coaching class on optimalwork.com.
Yeah, that's what we talk about. And the last one is just being insightful, which is to really understand the challenge the person is facing. So all of that is those are the good ways to challenge yourself when you're dealing with someone who's suffering, but not just to tell them, hey, count your blessings.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, Kevin, I think that's a great note for us to end on here. So thanks so much for your insights here.
All right, Sharif. Great to talk to you again.
All right, we'll be back next week.